Chapter 33 continued. Ron gave her a hard look, feeling that she was just as much a part of the problem as the Pentagon. Since she really didn't care what was happening, she helped allow these military lunatics to do anything they wanted to do. I don't think that my father and brothers have anything to do with it. I also think you're in a mean mood. Leaving her coffee unfinished, Rebecca started gathering up her books. My mood is fine, he said, not quite sure why she was so upset. Isn't that nice for you, shot Rebecca. She started to walk away. Ron stared down at the unopened coffee that he was sure he was never going to get to drink. Wait a minute, he said, and started after her. She didn't turn around. Look, he said, overtaking her at the door of the cafeteria. Something happens in my head once in a while, and I just get screwed up about things. I'm sorry for what I said. Don't apologize unless you really want to, Ron. She stared full in his face, turned, and walked away. He went after her again. I said I was sorry. What do you want me to do? It would help if you learned to be nice. She walked away again. He hesitated this time. Maybe he would be better off if he let her go. Just when he was deciding that that was the right thing to do, he found himself trotting along to catch up with her again. Can I call you tonight? If you want to, she said without looking at him. Okay, he said, trying to sound happy and showing her how nice he could be. I'll call you later. He stopped and walked off in another direction. He needed to blow off some energy before he went back to the newspaper room. Jade watched him walk into the room with a quiet annoyance. He went to the mailbox without speaking to her and took out the pamphlets on the moratorium. Who called the meeting this afternoon? She said icily. Me, said Ron. Why? Her voice was made of solid stone. Because there's going to be a national anti-war action, and maybe we should do something about it here. Did you talk to Chris about it first? Why should I? Said Ron. You're hopeless, said Jade. Don't you realize that we're all together here, and Chris needs to know what's going to happen? I'll leave a note up in his office, said Ron. He watched her smooth face and overly exciting body that was stretched out across three wooden chairs. You know, he said, I wanted to call you. It wouldn't have mattered if you did, said Jade. Ron felt hurt. What had he done to her? Why was everybody mad at him all of a sudden? Look, said Ron. He hesitated, noticing that he seemed to be prefacing everything he was about to say with that word. He didn't understand what the thought meant and dismissed it with confusion. If I'm making mistakes, will you help me out? He couldn't help thinking that she was the most beautiful woman he'd ever been associated with, and that she was sophisticated enough to make Rebecca look like she belonged at a high school hop. I'm involved in other things right now, and other people. I don't have time to look out for you, Ron. I didn't mean that, he said. I don't care what you meant, she said, pulling her pink sunglasses down over her eyes, staring back into her book. Ron sat down to read through the pamphlets again. By noon, he was ready for the staff meeting. Jade had left the room, but he hadn't heard her go. I fucked that one up real good, he said out loud to himself. He went upstairs, found Chris sitting at one of the long tables. He was staring at his math book with a pencil in his mouth and a cigarette in his hand. His legs were tapping to the beat of the music. How you doing? Said Ron. Would I be bothering you if I came in? No, this room is for everyone, said Chris. Everyone we know, anyway. Am I supposed to check with you before I call a staff meeting? I don't know, said Chris. Are you? I didn't know that I was really supposed to check with anyone. I'm on the staff, said Chris in an even tone, putting down his pencil. So I guess I'd like to know about it. What's it for? There's going to be a moratorium next week. Right, said Chris. Did you know about it? Yeah, said Chris. I've got a meeting with President Sewerman this afternoon to see about getting the day's classes canceled so that they won't interfere with any of the workshops. Wow, you guys got the whole thing organized already, said Ron, feeling stupid for the 20th time that day. But the commuter really isn't doing anything, right? Chris picked up his pencil and began tapping it to the beat of the traffic song that had just come on Julian's radio show. Right, said Ron. Do you know what happened? It just got lost in the shuffle of Peter leaving and people not paying attention to details. So that's the idea of the meeting, huh? Yeah. Far out, he said, bobbing his head. What do you want to do? Print up a special issue, a small one, right away, and get it out to the high schools on the morning of the event. That could cause problems. If kids cut school to come here, the schools could say we distributed material that encouraged them not to go to school. We just don't sign anything and deny that we ever distributed off campus. Paper is free around the school. We can't help it if somebody brings it to a local high school. That's pretty wild, said Chris, laughing. But don't tell too many people that you're doing it. Okay, said Ron. He got the definite impression that Chris wasn't going to be one of the people helping to do it. But that would be no problem at all. By the way, do you know some guy named Lashley? English, right? Got any idea about a good paper for a topic in his class? I'm not really sure. Ask Julian, said Chris, thinking that would be comical. Julian T. Willie had just entered the room, wearing a red and black scarf that he kept wrapped around him despite the 80-degree heat in the radio station. He wasn't sweating. How do you like the show, he said, stopping so that his back was to Ron. Far out, said Chris, tapping his pencil like a short burst of applause. He ended the gesture by throwing his pencil in the air, leaning back in his chair to catch it. Julian laughed and loosened up his scarf. Ron could see that he was wearing a shirt and a t-shirt underneath his heavy sweater. He was painfully skinny. What do you think Ron should use for the paper in Lashley's class? Some sort of primer, said Julian quickly. Ron got up and started out of the room. He had about a half hour before the meeting. I announced your meeting on the radio, said Julian, but I'm planning on missing it. Good, said Ron. After Ron left, Julian asked, does he know that I'm the art director? I don't know, said Chris. I don't think so. Let him do without an illustrator and help him to find a new masthead, said Julian. Why do you want to do that? Chris, he's a baboon. He predates higher thought. Chris laughed. Maybe not. Sometimes you're a fool, said Julian, throwing his scarf back over his shoulder. Hank arrived at Bell Labs just after noon. He parked his car in the visitor's section of the vast maze of lots that had been landscaped to be as unobtrusive as possible. The guard at the gate had directed him to the proper personnel area. Joe Lee kissed him goodbye like Donna Reed in an old movie where the star had played the part of a happy and supportive wife. He strode off toward the building in his brown corduroy jeans, green checkerboard shirt, leather patch sports jacket, and brown penny loafers. He turned around to smile and wave at her before he went in. The receptionist was young and very pretty. Her face was a perfect oval, and her clothes created the touch of class that you would expect to find in a magazine. She gave Hank her warmly professional smile when he approached her desk. He looked like a young scientist with tingly, curled, reddish-blonde hair that sprouted like a Scots afro. His thick glasses were a dead giveaway, along with the distracted way he stared at the floor while he was talking. Can I help you? She said. I'm looking for a job, said Hank. May I see your resume? She asked, telling herself that she'd been right, and wondering if he was married. Hank stared at her without saying anything. He was stunned. "Resume?" he said, finally, with a slow nod of her head. "If you don't have one, you can just fill out an application. But it would be better if you had one," she smiled again. "That sounds good," said Hank, nodding to himself. He seemed to be a curious man, she thought. Possibly like most of the other eccentric ones that came through. "In what area do you intend to apply for a position?" "Mathematics." "Could you be a little more specific? In that general area, we have dozens of openings." She calculated that a PhD in mathematics would start anywhere from between $18,000 and $25,000 a year, depending on particular expertise. It was her pastime to sneak looks at all the salary scales and play out little fantasies about how she would fit into particular men's lives. When she first started working there, she imagined herself to be an applicant. But as time passed, she stopped doing that because it made her uncomfortable about her own inadequacies. It was much more fun to play this game because the men were always trying to put their best foot forward, whether they realized it or not. She was their first encounter with the company. She'd heard that the phrase repeated endlessly in her training films. "The poor thing doesn't know how to go about things at all," she thought to herself. He wasn't handsome, but she didn't mind the way he looked. If he was older and thinner, he might look like Danny Kaye. She tried to picture him dancing and had to stifle a giggle. He really didn't look like that Danny Kaye at all. "Do all the jobs that you have require degrees?" inquired Hank. "Even maintenance," she said, changing her expression abruptly. Suddenly, he was wearing fat, greasy overalls and carrying a wrench. "Are you a student?" "I was," said Hank, looking back down to the carpet. "I don't think we'll have anything for you until you finish school," she said, sympathetically slinging a book bag over his shoulder and feeling like she was sending him off to class. "Thanks anyway," said Hank, mixing his smile with a grimace and heading towards the door. "What happened?" said Jolie. "I have to send them a resume," said Hank, putting his key in the ignition and feeling her fingers curl the hair behind his ear. "I like it around here," she said. "What's a resume?" "Where I went to school, where I worked, what I'm qualified for." "An application," she said suspiciously. "Sort of." "You didn't even get to fill out an application," she said, clenching her fist, drawing tighter on his curls. "Ouch!" Hank winced. He rubbed his hair. "They asked if I had a resume. What did you do that for?" "Who'd you speak to?" she said sarcastically. Hank stopped the car in the right-hand lane of the highway. He stared at her without saying anything. She thought he looked creepy and felt a little frightened. "I didn't mean to hurt you," she said quietly. "Yes, you did." Hank lit a cigarette and threw the car into gear and set his gaze on the road. The meeting started late. Ron panicked when it was 1 o'clock and no one had showed. Jade told him to relax. She told him that everything would eventually happen and that everybody was already always late for meetings. Ron thought about the way she looked with her legs open and her heels pointed toward the ceiling. He wanted to tell her that he had more control of himself now and would even get better in the future. But this wasn't the time. What Ron was thinking was written all over his face and pose. She wasn't going to go to bed with him again, not unless she changed her mind, and she couldn't imagine what would make her do that. As he paced in front of her, she thought that she'd tell him the next time they were together. She would also tell him that his hair was getting greasy, because he needed to wash it more frequently now that it was longer. She remembered the feel of his hair. It was as fine as baby hair, had highlights of blonde that had totally disappeared now. Rex was dark like the winter and had a silver chain hanging from his belt that she loved to watch swing. She saw Ron was sweating and told himself that he had no idea of how to be cool. When the meeting actually started, everything went smoothly. About 20 people were crowded into the room, and Ron started by briefing them on the moratorium. Like himself, more than half the staff had been unaware of the whole thing, so there was a sustained level of interest. He told them he wanted to get something 4 to 8 pages long to the printer in 2 days. He said that there wasn't actually enough time to do the job properly, but that informing people about what was going to happen was their main objective. Ron stopped and looked at Chris, who was bobbing his head and twirling his mustache. Chris is going to write one of the articles, and right now the rest of the space is up for grabs. He pulled out a list of possible areas that he'd worked up. He passed around the picture of the interrogation of the Viet Cong prisoner that he'd saved. "I want to blow this up and use it for the cover." "That's a bit heavy-handed, don't you think?" asked Ted Gleason, a cartoonist whose major themes centered around hairy arms projecting out of commodes. "It'll get their attention," he answered. Ron was amazed at how easily things had gone when the meeting broke up. He told some girl to prepare a list of activities going on in the college, and she just said that she'd do it. Several people had come up to Ron and asked what he wanted them to do, and he'd assigned articles from his list. A thin girl with jet black hair and an awkward look on her face said that she wanted to do some of the writing. Her tone warned Ron that he'd better give her a good assignment. So he just showed her the list and told her to pick anything she wanted. Her name was Lorraine. Ron felt like he should know her, but he didn't. It was at the close of the meeting that Julian T. Willie burst into the room and announced that as his personal tribute to the moratorium, he intended to wrap the commuter a la Cristo. Ron wasn't sure what it had to do with the Count of Monte Cristo, but figured it was because he'd never been able to sit through the entire movie. Julian was excited as he continued, "I'm going to have to settle for masking tape as my primary material." "Where are you going to get the money for all that tape?" said Chris. "The commuter budget," said Julian, looking over at Ron with a gleeful smile. Lorraine had moved into the circle around Julian and Chris as they walked to the door. Jade said, "See, there wasn't any reason to get excited." Ron hated that she kept referring to his penchant for getting excited. He wanted to ask her why she kept bringing it up, but instead he asked, "What's Julian going to do?" She shook her head at him, and he felt embarrassed, gave her a boy of expression. "He's going to wrap everything up in masking tape?" "Why? It's a form of art." "Yeah," said Ron, bewildered. "I don't understand." "I didn't think that you would." He asked her out. She refused. She did so quite convincingly. Undaunted, he asked, "Why?" She was angry when she answered. "I said, no, Ron, that's enough." She left the room. Ron had a little time before he had to go back and face Lashley. Country Joe and the fish filled the snack bar, and there was no line at the counter. Ron plunked down his fifth quarter of the day and got a container. He saw Lorraine at one of the back tables by herself. She seemed to be straining to overhear a conversation that was taking place at the next table between a guy and a girl. He saw her notice him from about 10 feet away, but when he got there, she looked up and gave him a startled, "Oh, hi." "Can I sit down?" he said. "Sure." She picked up her books from the seat next to her, but he'd already grabbed a different chair. They exchanged an awkward look. Ron thought she had a crooked mouth. What do you think you'll write? He said. You mean for the newspaper? She lit a cigarette, holding her lighter in both hands for the operation. She exhaled in a large stream and stared at the way her hair was curling down on her forehead. The normal thing. There's a lot of that around, said Ron. She flicked her wrist out in a stylized gesture that resembled a branch snapping back after it had been pushed down. When I was an editor of my high school newspaper, we did a lot of anti-war stuff. Did you ever see anything that the Rahway Rivulet turned out? She was trying to sound more professional than he was trying to sound. I'm not from around here. Besides, it's been a long time since I was in high school. She shifted her eyes to the long line of people who were now waiting at the snack bar. Class must have gotten out, she said. She fixed her eyes on him. What do you think I should write? Well, part of what we're doing is trying to get younger kids in the high school interested. Why don't you write something geared to them? I might. For a long moment, they sat without saying anything. Then Ron picked up what was left of his coffee and excused himself. He went up to Lashley's office, but nobody was there. He smoked a cigarette and waited. After he smoked another cigarette, he left.